And now to talk about the earthquake that shook Chile this weekend, where people were woken up in the middle of the night as the 8.8 magnitude quake hit early Saturday morning. Death and damage tolls continue to increase. Rayanne Anderson is originally from Saskatchewan, but she's now living in Santiago. And here's a clip where she's describing the quake to the CBC just a few hours after it happened.
It's kind of groggy because it was like at 4:30 in the morning. And, you know, you're sound asleep. We actually went to bed quite late because we stayed up to watch the Canadian-Slovakia hockey game. And it was about 4. We'd only been asleep for a couple hours, you know, and the bed just starts trembling a little bit, which isn't all that out of the ordinary. And my husband got up because he was a bit concerned about our son, you know, just to make sure he was calm. And when he got up to go and see our son, all of a sudden the shaking got really, really intense, you know, like that would throw you off balance, which I'd never experienced before at all. So all of us headed downstairs, grabbed the keys and went out, and like, it was really shaking. I thought we'd fall on the stairs and all that. But we made it out fine, along with everybody else in the neighborhood. Everyone was outside and checking up on people. Alarms and sirens were going off all over the place. And just kind of trying to catch your breath. It was extremely strong, but it was long, you know, because sometimes you can have just this one big bang, you know, a big shake, and it's done. But this, it was just a little shake, a little stronger, and then really strong, and it kept shaking strongly, and then it kind of died down, you know. It was like this big crescendo and then a decrescendo, you know. You don't really put a big scale on it until you start going through your house and seeing what fell down. Both of our TVs, big dresser, all the drawers came out. All of my teacups fell down and crashed. It moved the fridge about 5 inches. It moved wall units. We've got friends further south, closer to the epicenter, that live in like an old colonial house, like adobe house, and almost all of her roof came down, like right on top. But they all got out without any problem. But quite a few of the older structures further south are quite badly damaged or gone completely.
She's Rayanne Anderson, formerly from Saskatchewan, now living in Santiago, Chile, where the Chilean government says the death toll nationwide has surpassed 700, and there are about 2 million people that have been affected. So here we have a quake that was much, much more powerful than the January 12th quake that devastated Haiti. And yet, while the death toll is still remarkable in Chile, property damage was slight in comparison to anything that was happening in Haiti. And it has people wondering, well, why, when it was so powerful in Chile, why was it so much less in impact? Once again, we call on Paul Glover, Professor of Petrophysics at Laval University. Hello, Professor.
Good afternoon, Jackie.
So how do you explain it?
Well, it's very difficult because you find some of these very big earthquakes, they don't cause very many fatalities at all, while others, a huge amount. And in Haiti, you had the earthquake happening just underneath a very large population center. Not very far from big population centers here, but the building codes in Chile are very, very good, and they have a lot of earthquakes there, and they also have a lot of very big earthquakes. So you find that they cope with the earthquake systems a little bit better. For example, in 1960, there was a magnitude 9.5, which it remains the biggest instrumented earthquake that anybody's ever measured on the planet. And that only had 1,655 fatalities. So it's not very linear. You know, you can't say bigger earthquakes, therefore bigger fatalities by any means.
9.5, that was registered in Chile as well.
Yes, that was in 1960, and that was only about 100 kilometers or so to the south of the one that happened on Saturday.
Okay, and the quake that struck Haiti, that was 7.
That was a magnitude 7. Now, magnitude 7 to magnitude 8.8 doesn't sound an awful lot, but actually 8.8 is about 50 times bigger than a magnitude 7.
Okay, 50 times. I was reading in one press report 500 times, but 50 times, which is still
50 times on the size.
Yeah.
About 500 times on the energy that radiates from it. but not all that energy will be put into destructive force on the surface.
So the Chile's quake's epicenter was how far underground?
The Chilean quake was about 35 kilometers underground, so it was still fairly shallow. And because it's fairly shallow, it has a greater capacity for doing harm.
And it was occurring offshore?
It occurred offshore, yes.
Okay, unlike Haiti again, which was what, eight miles underground?
No, it was about the same sort of depth underground, but that was directly underneath the population centers.
So tell me more about why Chile has these enormously powerful earthquakes.
Well, what happens along the whole coast of Chile is that you have two plates. You have the Nazca Plate, which is in the Pacific, and the South American Plate. And the Nazca Plate is sliding under the South American Plate at about an angle of 25 degrees, but also at a rate of about 80 millimeters per year. And that, even for plate tectonics, that's quite a large rate. So these two huge great plates with their enormous masses come together, and one slides under the other at about 8 centimeters per year.
And is that a lot?
That's a very great deal. That's more than a lot of plate junctions you see. And if you can imagine, if for a couple of years the plates stick, then you have all that pent-up energy until you have the cathartic experience of suddenly the thing being released. An old colleague of mine once said, you know the earthquake is going to happen. It's like bending a pencil. But you don't know exactly when that pencil will break. But you can be certain that it will break at some point because you're bending it so much. And it's the same thing here. You're storing all that energy at a rate of about 8 centimeters per year. If you don't have an earthquake for 100 years, then you've got 8 meters of movement to happen. And actually, that's what we've had here. We've had about 8 meters of movement at about 35 kilometers over the whole length of about 300 kilometers as the Nazca Plate disappears underneath the South American Plate.
So does that mean more or less frequent in years to come?
In that particular area, it should mean that they'll have a little bit of a quieter time. The nice thing about some areas is they have lots of little earthquakes, and that always gets rid of this built-up energy, so you don't have any large earthquake occurring. But in this particular area, if you look at the historical seismology maps, you can see there was a very big earthquake to the south in 1960, some big ones to the north over the last couple of hundred years as well, but nothing in the middle, and now we've had it. So that little area there is going to be relaxed now for a little bit of time to come.
Did anything register in Quebec by any chance?
I checked our seismograph, but I couldn't see anything on it. Sometimes you get a good transmission of energy, and sometimes you get a very bad transmission of energy. We did actually see the Haiti one in our seismograph, and we saw the one in the Sumatran earthquake in 2004 as well. So I'll have to go back to that and see whether I can extract anything from it.
Were you tracking the tsunami, wondering if it was going to hit Hawaii or Japan? I was just imagining what you were doing through the course of that day.
I did a little bit of that. I looked initially at the tsunami locally and saw that the wave heights weren't so very large. And then I sort of got a little bit bored of it because I didn't think that they would have a particularly large problem over at Hawaii and on the other side of the Pacific. But the thing is, you never can tell. It depends so very much upon the local topography or the shape of the ocean bottom. And that tends to, in some cases, amplify the size of the waves. So it certainly was worthwhile keeping an eye on that. And, of course, it's 15 to 20 hours to cross the Pacific on a tsunami, as it were. So people did have the time to be warned